Mr. Mayor, reel two. This has a fault on his microphone throughout the reel, so only the right-hand channel is copied.
Mr. Yogi Mayor, reel two. Yes, this is most interesting. You know, the it gives the atmosphere of the time for somebody like yourself, a university student, so well. You were in the sports group, although you were Jewish. Is that because of the support of your non-Jewish friends?
No. Like in England, the majority of Jews were in non-Jewish organizations, especially if you imagine that you might be one day a champion, because then you had to specialize. And I just spoke by phone to Sir Arthur Gold, who was the commandant of the British Olympic Games. And we just confirmed this opinion, because we met in 1939 when I came to England, about leading Jewish sportsmen all over the world cannot belong to a Jewish club, because it's a social gathering. And the emphasis not as much on sport than on being amongst friends, being playing together, wrestle. The quality doesn't matter so much, but you enjoy to be there. It's a social thing. And even in England, when in Hampstead the golf club would not accept any Jews, even after the war, there was this feeling of sport has also a social background. And many people, for them, sport was an expression of their relationship to other people. I, as a boy, belonged to the local swimming club and was a very active member. And whenever I participated in sport and did well here or there, it was never any reason that because I was Jewish there was any difficulty. And a friend of mine was in the same sports club. She became the German student or academic champion in swimming. And again, nobody in the club would not participate in celebrating her success because she was Jewish. When I went to Berlin, in 1932, I joined the Berliner Sportclub. There were quite a number of Jewish participants. And then by fluke, I won a competition at the big sporting event, which was called the Sport Something for the Unknown, which was only open to people who had not won a national championship. I won that. And from that day onward, in my club, all the German champions and Olympic Games participants were like brothers helping me, because I wanted to be a decathlon. And I remember that German champion with that and that name spent hours with me to train on hurdles on somebody on something. That was in 1932. In 1933, I decided to change university, which is frequent in Germany, that you are 2 years at one and two the others. So in summer you go somewhere, there were lakes like Berlin on the water sports, and in winter you go down to Munich or somewhere for skiing. And in the last terms, you go to somewhere where you professionally need a good degree, because the degree had a certain coloring according to the university you took your degree. A degree was easy. It was after 3 years, and you wrote about something which nobody else had written about it, which is still today that for a thesis you must have a theme which nobody has touched before. So it's original academical contributions. All right. At the same time, I must bring in what happened in sport had happened in the Jewish youth movement. And in 1916, there was a gathering of non-Jewish youth organizations on a mountain called the Hohe Meißner, where they decided, some of them, that being German, they could not accept Jews in their groups. And they demanded there should be a ruling for all, and that was refused. But from then on, the Jewish organizations, youth organizations, became the thing. And all of us joined them who were interested. And they were their character as much anti-establishment as the others were, by in their dress, or not drinking, etc., etc. And so in 1932, when I went to Frankfurt, we had a big meeting, and the organization, which was called Kameraden, Deutsch-Jüdischer Wanderbund, split into or three sections. One was socialist, the other one was Zionist under the influence of Martin Buber, and the third one was very strong German-orientated. With the clear understanding that all of us did not believe that our being German could be decided from the outside. This was a decision which was in us, and it's only we ourselves could decide whether we were German or not. Legally, we will remain German at that time. It was before the Nuremberg Laws. And I became the leader of one of the three splinter groups called the Schwarze Fähnlein.
The black?
The black little flag, Schwarze Fähnlein. Interesting thing is the color black has always been the color of the German romantic. And not as people sometimes say, the blue flower. And this goes right back to the German liberation from Zieten, the Black Hussars with the crossbones and the skull. And you see it how it flows right through to the SS, which has the same crossbones, the same skulls, and the same love for black uniform. It's an amazing thing how the color black again and again plays a certain role and a certain image in this. And the SS man, the tall, blonde man in his black uniform, with the exaggerated breeches they wore and the exaggerated high cap, he was the answer to the romanticism of all the girls. And at the other end, to become a member of the SS had also, at the beginning, a very social distinction. The SR was the roughs, and the SS was National Socialism on a higher level. And only with the outbreak of the war and so on, and the creation of Waffen-SS and Leibstandarte, things started to change. But at that time, to be in the SS was quite more a distinction towards being just in the SR. In Frankfurt, I went to university, and in 1934, when I wanted to go back, there was the SR occupying the entrance and said to me, "You're Jewish, can't come in." And we had already a sign that we were Jewish on our papers. There was no reason why I could force my entrance in. And at the same time, when I had a letter from, or information from my firm of my father's, my father had died in 1924, that the firm could not anymore support my studies to be a member of the firm, because the firm had been taken over by the Reichsnährstand, and therefore all monies and everything had been taken over by the state, there was no money for me to continue my studies. So I had no university and I had no money. But a cousin of mine invited me every day for lunch as long as I was teaching his little girls or helping them with their homework. And a short time afterwards, I heard that in Herlingen, which was one of those famous Waldschule, they wanted a teacher for sport. And I applied, and I stayed up there for the whole summer, a bit of the winter. And there I met for the first time Martin Buber, who came occasionally on weekends and read from his translation from Hebrew into German. And he created new German words which we never heard before, which we thought were the right translation for the Hebrew word. And he did this together with Franz Rosenzweig.
Were you religious at this time? Did you go to synagogue?
Did I get...
Were you religious? Did you go to synagogue?
No. I went to synagogue when my father died, every day, because my brother, who adored my father, my older brother, insisted on it. So I went every morning and every evening. So I had a very good Jewish upbringing, and I wrote even in school a thesis on the request of the rabbi, who was a young man. He had an Iron Cross from the First World War. Beautiful speaker, young, an excellent contact with young people. And because I was leading in sport and youth movement, he said, you have to come every Shabbat to the synagogue to set an example. And then he said to me, I think if you would do me great honor, so he put it, to write a thesis, which at the end, when you take your Abitur, will be the only one which has been done for a long time, where a student wrote over a whole year a thesis. And we agreed that I would write about the Bible, you know, excavations and their value to the Bible. I got terribly interested in it at the end. Mm-hmm. Tel Amarna and all those. And this was produced in my Abitur. And as I was not very good in school because I was completely disinterested, especially in the sciences, this was one of my credits which I had. And when I left school, the final report says, and within the school and outside the school, he led groups of young people with great success. And in the sports, special name for it, of all the schools, he won with distinction. That helped me to get through. They had to kind of bolster it up a bit. So it really was worthwhile. Let me go to university. I was much later told that it was that they felt it was no sense that I was so outstanding in certain things like German and religion and sports and art and so on, that because I was no good in science, what could they do? To repeat it, I would never be able to do science because I just hated it, and I said so. I just sat there, I didn't want to take part. I regret it now, but anyhow, I got through, and so I got into university, just that is coming back.
I was wondering also, you know, around this time, of course, the Olympics were a major event, weren't they?
Yeah.
You know, did that have any particular significance?
In 1934, Jews were excluded from sport. For a short time, they were able, Jewish organizations, sport organizations, to use facilities as long as they didn't share it with other Germans. So Jews were allowed to swim in the same pool only as long as they were amongst themselves. And all Jews, or non-Aryans, as they called it, strange word, had to leave sports. And that is a point I'm very much involved in writing about it, and so what happened. We had a very strong Zionist organizations already. Of course, they multiplied at that moment. And we had, through the Jewish ex-servicemen, under their protection, a non-Zionist organization called SHIELD. And Maccabi and SHIELD had an enormous response from all those who were excluded from sport, and created an enormously successful sports organization within 1 year. And all people who were thrown out of certain sports were anxious that their sport would prevail. So, for example, in Frankfurt, we had a special riding department, skiing, mountaineering. Everyone who got out of those specialized sports tried to build up his own little group. And the Jewish organization carried on with their own championships and so on, let us say, for 2 years. And the people now with whom I speak said it is quite astonishing what in 2 years was created. And I became the editor of the
Yes, you were saying how successful they were in 2 years.
Successful. And in 1934, out of the blue, I received a note from the so-called Reichssportführer von Schamhausen that I would have to report, it was just a printed form filled in, for training, what they called an Olympia Lehrgang, it's an Olympic Games training course, to the Center for Athletics in the Black Forest. And my firm was informed that they would have to carry on paying this my salary. This was not a holiday.
And what I were you doing then? What job were you doing then?
I was editor of sports paper and also doing what's it called, Jugend Edson, and doing youth work for the ex-servicemen. And I went to the station with my form, which was identically the same soldiers had when they went on leave or otherwise. And I had a third class to go to this center. And there, all non-Jews had to leave, apart from a small group of people who were appointed to look after us, including one of their best coaches. We were a very small group of people, maybe a dozen, I don't know the exact number. All those who had still, well, as it before 1933, done well in sport. But I was so upset about it that I had personally done very little on training. Anyhow, we went training for 5 days like mad, treated with the greatest courtesy. And among us was a girl, Grete Bergmann, an enormous amount written about her, who was already at that school before the Nazis came to power, and she knew the coaches and she knew the people, and she was nearly a friend of all, even the cooks all knew her. She always went all her holidays, she spent up there, she was very good. But anyhow, it was on Saturday, we had to go down to the town where there was a running track for training, for tests. No other person was allowed to enter this place. And you can imagine after 5 days training, as we never had done it before, all I could do was to high jump on my knees. But that was, much later I intended that none of us would be in a form to do anything. But still, two or three of them were really good. And they were invited to another course. One of them was Grete Bergmann. And she was then invited to take part in a championship, not as an extra because she didn't belong to any clubs and couldn't belong to any clubs. And she equaled the German record in high jump. Under terrible condition because the officials were yelling at her and it was raining. And she was then subsequently called into one of the German small group which was left afterwards, really the selected group for Olympic Games, and there were three girls.
And they were all Jewish, were they? Or just
none of them was
just
Jewish.
Her.
She was Jewish.
She was Jewish. What, could I have her name?
Gretel Bergmann.
Gretel.
Gretel.
Oh, Gretel,
Bergmann,
yes.
Like Humperdinck's. Gretel Bergmann. There's an enormous amount published about her, dissertations about her. To cut a long story short, the last month or two before the games, she received a letter that she could not be included in the German team because their performances would not warrant it, roughly speaking, like that. And in spite of having equaled the German record, but if she wanted, she could get two standing tickets for the games. She had been in England before the games and became English champion, but of course she couldn't represent England because she was not an English citizen. And she went back to Germany, she says, under pressure. I personally dispute that because no Nazi would have wanted Jews to come back to Germany and create a difficult situation. But the girls were told that she was ill, and therefore the Germans had only two in the high jump, of whom one was suspected by her already to be not feminine at all. And after the games, it was declared that she was actually a man, and she had hoodwinked the German authorities in getting into the team. Now, how you could hoodwink in sports for the Olympic game to pretend you are a woman when you are a man, that is very difficult. She got even convicted and later on married and had two sons as a man. There, all this is a lot written about it in the Olympic Games. And the discussions about the Olympic Games with Hitler and all that, there's so much literature that it would be nearly a waste of time.
Did you yourself go to the games? Did you go at all?
I watched the games because we felt the moment all the posters disappeared and the Stürmer disappeared, and we knew that Jews from other countries should be treated with courtesy. We know now, and it's very difficult for me to divide what I read afterwards and what I know whilst I was there. And it is very, what the German called Zeitzeuge. It is very difficult to tell something that actually I didn't know about it. I only read about it in 1988 or 1990. Or I get explanation from literature I read. But as it, I can only, for your interview, I would only say that we went to the stadium, good tickets, no difficulty. It was amazing how easily one could get tickets for the games even then, Jewish or non-Jewish. And I watched the games, especially the athletics, and Jesse Owens, and all that. And the interesting situation was that I wanted to see the long jump because I was interested in that. And I saw the competition between Jesse Owens and Lutz, who was a German champion. And how during this competition they helped each other to adjust their marks. And then finally, with the last jump, Jesse Owens won. They both were sitting down very close to each other on the lawn, just next to the pit, where they were long jumping, and talked about their sport. The beautiful blonde Aryan, Lutz Long, and Jesse Owens. And Jesse Owens became the most loved competitor at the whole stadium. It's only funny, I always explain it. The Germans have a certain dialect, the Berliner. When they say to, for example, they say, Kesser Schnauzer, means he has a very clever way of talking. Or she's a Kesser girl, that means she's very just that. And so like the word Kesser, which is typical Berlin dialect, the word Yeser fitted in their mouth beautifully. And you heard the shouting, Yeser, 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 all over the stadium. The story that Hitler refused to shake hands with Jesse Owens is not true. Two Americans won the high jump, which was the first competition in which black people took part. And until then, Hitler had called all the winners up to his lodge, which was built like a balcony in the stadium. And it was time to see those two. He disappeared as he did when he came, went on back. He had other things to do, so he went down by lift and then through a tunnel out of the stadium. He never saw how he arrived, only learned that much later. There was a long, long tunnel going right through underneath the stadium up to his lift. He went by a lift up in his lodge, and then he came down a balcony and disappeared like that. He disappeared. And in the evening, I wasn't present. He said now that when he was asked, why didn't you shake hands with Jesse Owens? He said, I would not shake hands with an ego. But that is only now reported. I wasn't present. He didn't invite me there. So that is one of the cases where you have to separate between what you knew and what you have learned afterwards. When I'm just writing on my thesis, I make it quite clear that I do not want to repeat what other people have reported afterwards, and I can only bring my contribution. Before the Olympic Games, we had already the Nuremberg Laws. And as I told you about my living in with my non-Jewish friends, it just didn't affect us to such an extent, especially not in Berlin. There were places where there was a sign, Judenunterwünscht, but there were many who hadn't. And when they were challenged, they always said, we've got so many international guests, we don't think it's the interest of Germany that we put this up. And if you wanted, some did, but many didn't. And you could still go, if you wanted to go, to theater and so on. And the help was, that is important, through the Stürmer. The German population had a certain image what Jews would look like. This image is created by inbreeding, and you find a certain type, which you very often find also in Orthodox Jewish community in England, which are a certain type, intentionally sometimes, who look different to others. There's an enormous amount of intermarriage, so this type is even enhanced. And because this was a picture exaggerated, which projected to the German population by the Stürmer, until the beginning of the war, in public, very rarely people were spotted as Jewish, but in small towns they were known as Jewish. And still, in spite of all this, we know of Jewish children who stayed in German schools till 38. Officially they were already excluded years before, because the headmaster and the others just didn't want them to leave, and always made petitions and so on, and so we know that now.